March of Time. Time, the weekly news magazine, takes you to the news fronts of the world. How American war wives are living out the long absence of their men. A personal meeting with three of Hollywood's greatest but smallest stars. An eyewitness report on liberated Europe's least known leader. And for the first time on the air, the inside story of the fall of Benito Mussolini. Stand by for the March of Time.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Westbrook Van Voorhis speaking for the editors of Time magazine. As the downfall of Germany becomes ever more certain, comes ever nearer, one of the biggest unanswered questions is, how will Adolf Hitler fall? Will the Führer's downfall come like Il Duce's? Is the fate of all dictators the same? This week, Time magazine's sister publication, Life, publishes a sensational eyewitness record of Benito Mussolini's fall from power. It is written by none other than Count Dino Grandi, one of Italian fascism's original Big Four. Once Mussolini's leading rival, always a party stalwart, serving as Il Duce's foreign minister, ambassador to London, and minister of justice. As Grandi tells it, the story begins on July 9, 1943, when Allied forces landed on Italian soil in Sicily.
Mussolini immediately went off for another of the famous meetings with Hitler, this time in northern Italy at Feltre. Mussolini urgently asked for reinforcements. Hitler said they would be forthcoming if, and only if, the defense of Italy were handed over to the German General Staff. Mussolini returned to Rome and called a meeting of the Grand Council in order to make its members responsible for the decision to hand Italy over to the Germans. I said to myself, this is the moment. We must get out of the war as quickly as possible. I drafted a resolution demanding that Mussolini should hand back to the king both command of the armed forces and the supreme powers as head of the state. I sounded out 14 members of the council. 12 agreed. Then I took another decision. I called at the Palazzo Venezia to see Mussolini himself.
I already know of your schemes, Count Grandi.
They are not secret, Ducci. The game has to be played in the open.
You dare not introduce your treacherous resolution.
I shall, Ducci. And I shall repeat all I have said here before the Grand Council.
We shall see, Count Grandi. We shall see.
It was a challenge. Only the king could overthrow the dictatorship, and only the Grand Council could empower the monarchy to act. Nor could we seek the army's aid. The Constitution could not be restored by a military plot. We had to take the risks alone. At the Grand Council meeting, Mussolini was ready for us. Armed fascist militia swarmed the corridors and hallways. It seems we stood little chance of leaving the building alive. We took our seats at the horseshoe table. Mussolini was cold, arrogant, sure of himself. He was the boss.
I have summoned you solely to inform you of events. I shall point out in an order of the day what measures shall be taken in Sicily. There only the Germans were brave. Italian soldiers refused to fight. Our own generals handed Sicily over to the enemy.
The army is not responsible for Italy's disasters. It is you, Benito Mussolini. You betrayed the Italian people the day you first began to Germanize Italy.
Yes!
You drove us into Hitler's arms.
That is not true, Count Grandi.
It is true. You believe you have the devotion of the people. You lost it the day you tied Italy to Germany. You believe yourself a soldier. Let me tell you, Italy was lost the very day you put the gold braid of a marshal on your cap.
That is not true. I was asked to take over the army. The people are with me. War widows thronged forward to kiss my hand.
War widows. In the last war, they knew their sons had died for king and country. Now they cry, Mussolini has assassinated our sons.
It is not true. Grandi lies to you.
Duce, he does not lie. The Germans have betrayed us. Yet you would have them take over our high command.
So, Gianno. My son-in-law. Now I know where the traitor is. We shall adjourn until tomorrow.
I protest, Duce. Our soldiers are dying while we talk. We must decide tonight. We must stay and vote.
Have it your way, Grandi. Council will recess for 30 minutes.
We had half an hour's pause. council split into anxious groups. Then Mussolini came back. He spoke.
I have let you speak your minds tonight. I could have stopped you and had a lot of you arrested. It seems there are people here who would like to be rid of me. I am 60. I could look on these last 20 years as a wonderful adventure that is now over, but I will not go. The king, as well as the people, are on my side.
I do not believe that, Duce.
You shall pay with your head for this treason, Grandi.
Perhaps. There is not a man in this room who does not know that the decision is now a matter of life or death.
Very well. We shall vote on your resolution, Grandi. We shall see. Scorz, I vote against Grandi's resolution. Swart.
I abstain.
De Bono.
I am for the resolution. De Vecchio.
The first votes were against us. Then suddenly it dawned on me. The incredible had happened. We had won. There were 19 votes for my resolution, only 7 against. Mussolini half rose and stared at us each in turn, numbed by the shock of defeat. Sentence had been passed on Mussolini, but he was still master of the army, the state, and the party, and he had Germany behind him. Now the king must act. At 4 a.m., I met the minister of the royal household. I gave him a copy of my resolution and told him what had happened.
Yes. Yes, Count Grandi, go on.
Tell the king we have put everything into his hands. There's not a moment to lose.
But who should succeed Mussolini?
Only a military leader and one who has not compromised himself in the past with fascism. The king must finish the dictatorship at once.
But what about yourself?
My duty is done. I have completed the task I set myself. And it is the last act of my political life. At noon, Mussolini sent for me. I let the king know of the summons. He sent word to me not to go. Then I knew that the king had decided against Mussolini. Mussolini seemed completely confounded by events. Ashamed to appeal to Hitler, he frittered away the precious hours. He arrived at the royal palace. The king refused to listen to him. And to his utter astonishment, he was arrested as he left. Mussolini was no more. And with his fall, there collapsed the entire structure of fascist dictatorship and of Italy's totalitarian regime.
So ends Count Dino Grandi's version of the fall of a dictator. How much of it is true remains for historians to decide. How much of it is Grandi's attempt to evade the punishment he might expect as Italy's number 4 fascist is for the United Nations to decide. As Life remarks, the real reason Mussolini fell was the advance of Allied armies across North Africa, Sicily, and Italy. This week, as the world studies the decisions made by the big three at Yalta, observers noted that the only Balkan country referred to was Yugoslavia. Apparent reasons? Yugoslavia is the home of the most successful resistance movement and the source of many a riddle as to liberated Europe. Most controversial of those riddles...
What sort of man is Marshal Tito, chief of the Yugoslav government? What are the real aims of the Yugoslav liberation movement?
Here tonight at the March of Time microphone to answer these questions... is able French-born John Phillips, photographer, correspondent for Life magazine, just returned to New York to report to his editors. Few reporters know Marshal Tito and the popular forces he heads, as well as John Phillips. He's been inside Yugoslavia 3 times in the past year, is personally well acquainted with Marshal Tito, and has been decorated by the Yugoslav partisans. John Phillips.
Tonight, some 600,000 partisans are fighting for the liberation of their national territory and the freedom of man. Badly dressed... undernourished and ill-equipped partisan brigades are attacking in zero weather in Slovenia, Bosnia, and Croatia. On Hungarian territory, partisan divisions are in the line. Partisan units have crossed the Drava River and are fighting on Austrian territory and are liberating Allied prisoners of war. One-third of Istria, long in dispute with Italy, has now been liberated from German control. And partisan patrols are within 10 miles of a great port of Trieste. Out of a nation of 15 million, There are 2 million dead. Out of a chaos and disunity, fostered by German occupation and tyranny, the National Army of Liberation has arisen, led by Marshal Tito. Their new spirit was demonstrated when, in a simple ceremony, at the Serbian parliament, President Ivan Ribar decorated Tito with the order of Hero of the Yugoslav People. The award took place in front of a handful of people, made up only of cabinet ministers and his personal friends, including myself, the only foreigner present. The word democracy was repeated several times, both by Tito and Ribar. When Tito said he accepted the decoration in the name of the hundreds of thousands of anonymous heroes who were fighting for freedom, he spoke for the people of Yugoslavia. Tito is the undisputed leader of his fierce, freedom-loving people. He is the voice who rallied them toward victory in their darkest hour of defeat. They fought under the banner of Smrt fascismo, sloboda narodnu, death to fascism, long live the people. And as the mantle of greatness fell on the shoulders of the American colonists under George Washington in their fight for freedom, the mantle of greatness now falls on the Yugoslav people under Tito, the greatest statesman to emerge out of a world war. And it is significant of the times. No longer are the people of the small European nations willing to be pawns in European power politics. Tito is the expression of a new democratic Yugoslavia. I believe he will lead Yugoslavia to a government of the people, by the people, for the people.
Thank you, John Phillips. For an American, it's about as natural as breathing to want to get the real lowdown of events, people, things. So especially in time of war, it's not surprising to hear the man on the street corner say something like this.
I have 2 sons in this war, so you can bet I read all the news I can get my hands on about where they are. And believe me, I go straight for the report of a guy who's been in the thick of it. The guy who knows what he's writing about.
Yes, you can spot that kind of report. There are many of them coming out of this war and many excellent reporters writing them. For instance, Time magazine's Bill Walton, who's just returned from almost 2 years with the AEF. Even before he got to Europe, Walton met the war face-on when the Coast Guard cutter Spencer was attacked by a U-boat. If you read in Time magazine Walton's story of that 8-hour battle, you remember how his vivid description brought the battle home to you. And if you read others of Walton's first-hand accounts in Time, the Western Front came alive for you. You sensed the paratrooper's terrible danger as he floated down through the flak and sniper's bullets on D-Day in Normandy. You understood something of what our men fought through at Cherbourg, Saint Lô, Aachen, Hürtgen Forest, and the Ardennes. At present, Walton is enjoying a well-earned rest. But meanwhile, other Time correspondents who know the war they're writing about, because they're in the thick of it, are cabling their reports to Time from every battlefront. With their eyewitness accounts, Time's editors each week write into their report of all the world's news a straight, connected story of the war that is authentic and real. That is one big reason why more than 1 million American families read Time, the weekly news magazine, this week and every week. This week, correspondents of Time magazine in 30 cities up and down the land reported on the girls who stayed behind. The lonely women, the brave, the caring, and the calloused. The faithful and the unfaithful. The working and the indolent. The ones who get into the newspaper headlines and the ones who do not. The findings, in part.
Wives and sweethearts of U.S. servicemen are terribly lonely. Most of those who are working will quit the day their man comes home. Once their man is back, they won't bother their pretty heads about the state of the nation.
There are, of course, some tragic situations that can't be helped. For instance, a beautiful Iowa girl married a young man in 1940. He became a flyer, and right after Pearl Harbor was reported shot down in the Philippines. Later...
The War Department regrets to inform you that your husband died in an enemy prison camp.
Time passed, and another man wanted to marry her.
No, Tom, I think we should wait until after the war. You'll be going overseas soon, too.
But finally, she agreed to remarry. Her second husband is overseas now. The other day, she had a baby. Same day, she had a cable from her first husband.
Freed from Jap prison camp on Luzon, en route home. Love.
Then there's the Atlanta, Georgia wife and her 2-year-old little girl.
We had to move in with Herb's parents. I work half a day at a bank, and Herb's folks take care of our little girl. Herb's letters are full of her.
How is she? What's she doing? Does she talk about me much? What does she say? I hope there's no change in my little girl.
But she has changed a lot. When I come home from the bank... Hello, Mother. Where's my baby?
Oh, she's gone to the candy store with her grandpa.
Oh, it's chilly. I hope he put on a sweater.
No, she didn't want to wear it. You're late.
Only a half hour.
What kept you?
Oh, I stopped with some friends.
I hope you aren't thinking of going out this evening.
Oh, no. Wouldn't you and Father like to go out somewhere?
Oh, we couldn't think of leaving you here alone.
They don't say so, but they seem to suspect that I'm going to invite some man in while they're gone. They're spoiling my little girl, letting her do whatever she wants to do. But I'm just living until the day Herb comes back. I think we'll be able to figure out almost anything once we're together again.
But take the case of Alice.
I'm not foolish enough to think that everything is automatically going to turn out all right when we get together again. I've changed. Maybe for the better, maybe for the worse. Anyway, I've got used to independence.
Yes, in 3 years, people do change. How can a woman remember everything about a man who's been gone so long? In Manhattan, a young wife welcomed her husband home. Everything was shipshape. Well, almost everything.
Gee, honey, the dinner smells good.
Does it?
And the flowers on the mantel.
And your favorite cocktails.
What's that, a martini?
Of course.
Well, honey, don't you remember I never drink martinis?
No, I'd forgotten. Darling, oh, there are probably lots of things I've forgotten.
The precious years rush past in Amarillo.
It's the evenings that get me. Give me any kind of work till I'm so tired, I just drop off.
In St. Paul.
I want to talk to a man so bad I could scream.
In Denver.
Will I ever have a baby?
In a Scully Square grill in Boston, where a soldier can always pick up a dame, there was a frilly young redhead who didn't look more than 17.
Well, I've been married since 1935. Got an 8-year-old son.
How long's your husband been gone?
A year. I want him back more than anything in the world.
What are you doing in the meantime?
Oh, dancing like everything. Having a heck of a good time.
Woman A steps out. Woman B stays home and takes care of her children. Woman C drinks too much. Woman D sits and sulks. Woman E goes to work in a war plant. Like the girl in Windsor, Connecticut.
If my husband thinks I'm going to keep on working after the war, he's crazy. I'm supporting the family now, but when he comes home, that's his job.
Then what's yours?
Keep house, look after the children, and keep him happy. And believe me, when he comes home, he'll have all the women he wants in me.
By and large, American women are okay. There are some infidelities, but most of them carry on, keep the home, make the weapons, doing in an infinite number of ways what the women of warriors have always done. Prepare for the days of peace, the return of their men from the war. What they want is pretty obvious and pretty old-fashioned. Motion Picture News of the Week. Tonight, 27 cities throughout the United States are having their first showings of the newest feature-length film in color by Walt Disney, The Three Caballeros. Already playing in Mexico and Peru, The Three Caballeros will also soon open in Brazil, Argentina, and the other Latin American republics. Tonight, on the March of Time, you will meet in person Walt Disney and his three caballeros, Donald Duck, Jose Carioca, and Panchito Pistolas. First, here are two songs from The Three Caballeros, the title number and Bahia.
Three caballeros, three gay caballeros, they say we are birds of a feather. We're happy amigos, no matter where he goes, the one, two, and three goes, we're always together. We're three happy chappies with snappy sarappies. You'll find us beneath beneath our sombrero. We're brave and we'll stay so.
We're bright as the peso.
Who says so? We say so. The three caballeros.
Time takes you now to Hollywood, where Walt Disney will tell you how and why he produced The Three Caballeros. And then he will introduce his three little friends for their first joint appearance on the radio. Come in, Hollywood. Go ahead, Walt Disney.
In some ways, nations are like neighbors living in a city block or a suburban community. The better understanding they have of each other, the more they get out of their lives. Their understanding begins when they learn to share their laughter. But they must find a common medium of entertainment. We found early in our experience that the animated motion picture was a medium that could be adjusted to the universal differences of language. Because of the popularity of Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, and their cartoon associates, the coordinator of Inter-American Affairs invited us in 1941 to visit the Latin republics in the interest of closer artistic relationships. There we found a literal paradise of material. Almost everywhere we visited, there was music, wonderful music. There were costumes and customs and beautiful cities. There were great contemporary musicians like Barroso, Brazil, and Lara of Mexico. Back in Hollywood, we laid our plans. Through animation, we had proved the truth of an old cliché. Actions speak louder than words. Then we went one step further. We made use of the music and dancing that we had heard and seen by combining live action and animation. Now, characters off the drawing board perform with real-life characters who act before the camera. We aim to make their actions understandable, enjoyable, and a source of laughter, whether your language is English, Spanish, or Portuguese. If we have succeeded in catching some of the delightful spirit of the Latin American people and countries in the Three Caballeros, we will be extremely happy. And now, three of the little fellows who made all this possible are in the studio with me. They are charming, understandable, and, well, we'll let you hear for yourself.
Well, look, aren't you going to say anything about Pan-American relations?
Pan-American relations?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Donald has a couple of his own Pan-American relations here in the studio, and he wants me to introduce them. Donald, will you translate what they say?
Okay.
Well, first, fresh from Mexico, that explosive little rooster with the Charles sombrero and the oversized gun belt, Panchito Pistola. Will you greet your new friends, Panchito?
No me gusta hablar mucho, pero si quiere que diga algo, pues pa' luego es tarde. Sí que me cuadra hacer nuevas conocencias, aunque aquí tengo ya pilas de amigos, por vía de Dios. ¡Ah, Chihuahua!
Will you translate, Donald?
It's bashful.
Bashful?
Sí, señor, una poquita de vergüenza, pero no le hace. Échenme al gallo más copetón, que aquí traigo con qué quererlo. ¡Yupa, yupa!
He won't talk.
He won't talk. Well, then let's try his partner. Now that suave, sharp man about Brazil with the body of a parrot and the soul of a poet, Jose Carioca. Jose?
Senhores e senhoras, salve! Alô, pessoal! What's cooking? Daqui vai um grande abraço bom brasileiro, um daqueles quebra-costela, bem apertado, bem carioca, papagaio louro do bico dourado. É um prazer estar com todos vocês novamente, meus amigos norte-americanos, completamente. Vocês são batatais, do barulho, eu fico louco.
Can you translate Portuguese, Donald?
Vocês foram doados a mim, os norte-american friends, and when do we eat?
When do we eat? Well, thank you, Jose. Well, there they stand, the three caballeros.
Oh, Mr. Disney.
Friends in storm and sunshine.
Mr. Disney.
Pals through thick and thin.
Donald, be quiet. Hey, Mr. Disney.
Huh?
Donald, we like to be introduced to. And we like, what you say, top billing.
Top billing? Well, if that's what he wants. Friends, I now present your old favorite. That paragon of patience, that model of meekness, that miracle of modesty.
Donald! Quiet! Gosh! I will now translate for Donald. He says you should treat him with more respect, because in every picture, he is the duck will lay for you the egg.
Yes, the golden egg.
He says the golden egg. And Mr. Disney, one small matter about this pal's truck thick and thin.
Well, what's wrong with that, Jose?
There's come a moment. We sing it for you. And pals down we may be,
when some Latin baby
says, let's do a baby.
Each man for himself.
Time marches on.
Thank you, Donald Duck.
March of Time on the Air calls your attention to the newest March of Time on the screen, The West Coast Question, the colorful story of what's happening as hundreds of thousands of new workers surge into shipyards and aircraft plants in the western states. Watch for The West Coast Question, coming soon to your local theater.
Over the same network every afternoon at 4 o'clock Eastern Wartime, listen to Time Views the News, another program prepared by the editors and correspondents of Time Magazine. And next Thursday evening at the same time, listen again to The March of Time.
The March of Time came to you from New York and Hollywood. This is the Blue Network of the American Broadcasting Company.